Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Karen Tynan, and I'm an attorney here in Sacramento. Here with me today is Kevin Bland, a shareholder in our Orange County office. This podcast dovetails with the introductory podcast about workplace safety and dives deeper into the scenarios of serious accidents in the California workplace. So, Kevin, did you know that in the average year, there's somewhere between 350 and 400 workplace fatalities in California? That's the usual number.
I know. And then think about that. That's more than one a day.
I know. And I see when the Cal OSHA reporter goes out, it'll typically have at least four fatalities reported for a week. You agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's talk about these serious accidents and fatalities. You know, some people might say it's an unpleasant subject, but we need to talk about it. We need to talk about how employers can deal with serious accidents and fatalities. So let's start out because it's very important for employers to understand how Cal OSHA defines a serious accident. So let's talk about that. Can you tell us a little bit about how Cal OSHA is going to define a serious accident in the workplace?
Yes. So it's a section number called 342A, and we often refer to that. And that's the reporting of a serious injury. That is where the definition is referenced for a serious injury. A serious injury is 24 hours of hospitalization for other than observation. That's
yes.
One. Loss of any body part, which is the other, a member of a
there
body.
There you go.
And also any permanent disfigurement as a result of a workplace accident. Now, I want to talk about workplace accident for a second, because this is a little nuance that people don't get. It is one of those things that occurs at the workplace. It doesn't have to be caused by the workplace. The prime example we see, someone is sitting at their desk in an office.
Yes.
Has a heart attack and dies in the office. So you don't think about, well, we know that wasn't caused by workplace, presumably. And so what happens? They don't report that to Cal OSHA because you have to report, as I define, what a serious injury is. And then you have to call within, it says immediately, no more than 8 hours.
Right.
And then there's this other thing that confuses everyone, this 24-hour exception to burden shift. So we'll get into that. Pretend like that doesn't even exist.
Right.
Phone call within 8 hours.
Yeah, let's talk about that immediate reporting, right?
Yes.
You're saying make the call.
Make the call. Now, heart attack, make the call, because I've had in the last year maybe four or five of these cases where it was a heart attack, and the only ticket they got was $5,000 for failure to report it because somebody had a heart attack sitting at their desk.
Right.
Maybe it's a little bit important to understand what the rationale of that is. It makes more sense to put it in context. Let's say you're working outside. One result of heat illness could be you could have a heart attack.
Yes.
So the division wants the opportunity to be able to determine whether it's work-related or not. So therefore, the reporting requirement for a serious injury doesn't get into the causation of it. It's just, did it happen at the workplace? In the parking lot, get it into the car, same thing happens. Or probably not the workplace.
Right.
They've clocked out, no report. Walking to, clock out, kills over with a heart attack at the workplace, reportable. And one of my most unusual cases I had on this reporting, food poisoning in the lunchroom. The guy passed away. He was allergic to shrimp, but it was his shrimp he brought in. And for some reason, he didn't know it had something in it. So that had to report. Went through the process. No one
right.
thought it needed to be reported. And here we go. Only citation, failure to timely report because he died of food poisoning and
right.
in the lunchroom. So very important to recognize that. One other practice tip on it when it comes to serious injuries. What I say is it may not even be a serious injury. the fire department comes. You call 911. The fire department comes. And then the fire department, if they do not report, they don't care. It could be someone that went into labor, had a baby. Right. It could be the heart attack guy example. It could be someone was vomiting and got sick. They were at the workplace, sitting at their desk. They have to report any time they roll to a workplace and transport. So that being said, even if it isn't serious, they took them to the clinic and they're gone and it's not a serious, they have, Cal OSHA has this report hanging here from the fire department because they don't want to get charged $5,000 for not reporting. And so I recommend anytime you've dialed 911, pick up the phone and say, hey, it turns out it's not as serious. I know the fire department called. Here it is. One thing they may ask is, okay, what's the name, the hospital, and that, so they can verify that the person right. actually wasn't serious. But don't be afraid of that report. The other thing on the report, it is very important. It says immediately, and then has this laundry list of right. all the things they want to know, with this one little sentence that says what you know at the time of the call. I have clients that will say, I've got to get all this gathered up. And then so 7 hours later, they finally call. They make this grandiose report. I say, no, time out. Call 15 minutes after it happened. You're not expected to know anything. How could you know anything other than I have something that's a potential serious? You avoided a $5,000 fine. You've got it on the books. Cal OSHA, unless it's a fatality, if it's just a serious injury, are likely not going to show up for a week, right?
Right.
Gives you an opportunity to find out, is it a serious not? Pick up the phone the next day and say, hey, it turns out the person was treated and released. It turned out it was a sprained ankle, whatever the case may be, took it off the books. And I have only had one case where they went and did an inspection following that. And it was allegedly a heat case. And I'll tell you how we handled that. The inspector showed up. He said, I'm here for the serious accident that you reported. I said, whoa, time out. You don't have jurisdiction. He goes, what do you mean I don't have jurisdiction? I said, because we withdrew that serious injury report. If that's the basis of your inspection, is no longer valid because there was no serious injury. So therefore, no jurisdiction.
Gotcha.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so there are ways that you're setting up in your call. This whole thing can be a strategy from day one. It wasn't any ill will. It wasn't anything. It was just making them follow the rules like we have to follow the rules. So I got off track a little bit.
No. I love it. And here's what I've had happen with some clients with fire department transports, right? Mm-hmm. And they're milling around, cleaning up a little, maybe some of their equipment. And somebody from the fire department says, yeah, we called this into OSHA while we were here. So the employer thinks, oh, it's been called in, yes. right? You know what? You don't get credit for what the fire department does.
Correct.
And so you don't get to say, oh, the fire department told me they're calling. It's your duty. You need to do it. Or have your counsel do it. If the scene's maybe too dynamic, you can call your attorney. They'll call the district manager, that the one, whatever that generic number is, and just report it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And so that you know what I've done, I know Karen, you've got this and what you're alluding to. I have a form that I have that comes to me and says attorney-client privilege across the top. It's a communication. I email that to my client to fill in the information, and he or she emails it back to me. Privileged communication. I review it, and the things that are irrelevant or do not need to be in the report or superfluous, I make the report on their behalf. Does not become an admission. That document is forever protected. And then I send a confirming email to the client that will say, for your records, the report was made to John Jones at the district office of at this telephone number at 4:03 p.m. on this date related to the accident or incident, a lot of times the incident of John Smith.
There you go. No, I like that. I like that strategy. And not relying on anyone else other than you or your counsel to make the report. So, Kevin, do you handle inspections that evolve from and are related to a serious or a fatality differently than, say, a complaint inspection or a programmed inspection? What can we tell our clients and the listeners about that?
Yes and no. And I'll tell you why I say yes and no. Fatality, absolutely. And I'll tell you, fatality, you have to automatically assume that the Bureau of Investigation, which is the criminal investigation unit of Cal OSHA, has opened a criminal investigation of the company and the immediate supervisor at the time that they show up. And the card, their business cards look the same. One will say Bureau of Investigation, Enforcement Unit. The other one will say Senior Engineer. They both may say Senior Engineer, same color. You don't know. So you have to understand this isn't just a fatality accident inspection. You are under a criminal investigation at that point.
And I fully agree. And so many people don't comprehend the power of the Bureau of Investigation, the referrals that they'll make to the district attorney. They don't understand admissions. They don't understand admissions by a supervisor. And so I wholeheartedly agree with you about fatalities, is that you do continue the cooperation that you discussed in our prior podcast. We talk about, you know, not being obstreperous or difficult, but you've got to remember when you've had a fatality, there can be the possibility of a criminal investigation, criminal charges, referral to the DA, and that can be very impactful. And you can't unring the bell later. 6 months from now, right? 6 months after the fatality, what are you going to do?
Exactly. And there's oftentimes that's when I get the case.
We're considering BOI. Also in fatalities, we need to consider that there could be a serious and willful petition for an additional penalty in workers' comp, or possibly a civil case if there's multiple employer work site, if there's a tool involved, a machine involved, maybe liability of another third party. So tell me a little bit about how you get that 50,000 foot view, considering, ooh, there might be a serious and willful. I need to think if there might be a related civil case, how can I help my client?
So here's my thing. I presume all of that is going to happen.
Okay.
Whenever there is a fatality, I presume all of that is going to happen. So we handle the investigation from the moment I have been there, and this is going to sound a little morbid, but like, the body is still there. I'm there.
Yeah, me too.
Then the DA shows up, and then OSHA shows up, and I control the scene and the insurance broker and the insurance company. I take control of the scene the best we can. Sometimes the police are there. You don't have as much control.
But you can collaborate, right?
We work together. Look, I'm at that point, I'm an attorney, but I'm also trying to manage the scene safely. And at the end of the day, that's very important, right? If you're there, look, let's make sure we're safe. You can't go in that area, Mr. Inspector, without all the proper PPE. We just had someone electrocuted. Where is your 40 cal suit? Where are your gloves and your hood? You don't get the, you know, or I've had a skylight fall. They want to come in. I have seen pictures of the inspector next to the hole with the guy fell through, looking down with no fall protection, trying to take measurements. You know, I mean, so yeah, it's important to control that scene from the onset. And here's the tricky part is the criminal, nothing has to happen with charges for felony for 3 years from the date of the accident.
Yes.
Nothing has to happen from the S&W aspect up to a year from the date. The citations for Cal OSHA come in 6 months. Those citations are the building block of the other two cases. So you have to be defending this Cal OSHA case, anticipating that in a year you're going to get the S&W, which is an uninsured event, which can be very, very expensive. On serious injury, especially, they're more expensive than a fatality.
Absolutely.
And then the criminal charges, which is very, very expensive, and that generally happens on. So you manage it through that. Now, let's talk about what do I mean by manage that. There's not going to be taking witness statements by the safety director, and there's not going to be taking witness statements by the HR person. Any witness statements are going to be in my handwriting and me, because that is not discoverable. The DA can't use that. We talked about this in an earlier podcast. Those are my impressions of the scene, my work product as an attorney. No one else has that privilege.
Right.
And so that's very important. If we're going to take pictures.
Right.
I'm just going to take the same picture that Cal OSHA.
That's what I always say, too. Take the same pictures the inspector's taking, and then take the picture of him taking the picture.
Yeah, yes.
Him or her.
Yes. Another thing that I've had happen is, hey, can you recreate the scene? Can you put the scaffold back together the way it was? No. We're not going to do that because that is not the evidence. That's tampering with the evidence, quite frankly. And you leave things as they are. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, do you ever take possession of evidence? Let's say you go to a scene with he's refilling his glass here. Do you ever take possession of a tool, an implement, anything like that? Because I have, at the scene of a fatality, say at a remote location, I don't want my client handling it. I want a chain of custody. Have you had that scenario? And what do you do if you have to hold on to a piece of evidence?
My office is full of things. I've got a ladder. I've got a nail gun. I've got a pair of rubber boots. I've got a shackle. I've got, and the list goes on. And so I maintain custody because one, we're under a duty to ensure. A lot of times I will send out an evidence hold to everybody.
Yes.
And I will want to make sure I've maintained custody of what I can control. Now, sometimes Cal OSHA beats me there and they get it. So I have to make an appointment to go look at it or experts. But what I do with the ones I have, somebody wants to see it, third party, Cal OSHA, whoever it is.
An expert. Great.
Expert. Great. Make an appointment through Heather, my case manager at the Orange County office. We will put you in a room. We will bring it out. You cannot do anything that modifies the show. You can take all the pictures, look at all you want, as long as you don't change it. And I've got a chain of custody and control. At the end of the day, what all of this is about when it comes to a serious injury and a fatality is controlling the environment, controlling the inspection. Early on, have an emergency preparedness plan. Another thing is media. I've had cases with media.
That was my next question.
Was it? Oh, okay. So, I've had some of the locations been controversial. Let's say on an Indian reservation and people in the neighborhood didn't want it. And then so you have to be prepared either if they have an internal media or I will draft something very nicely. And we stay to that script. And everybody knows, look, this is what you can't know what happened within 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days, sometimes not 5 months, a root cause on something.
Because I fully agree.
You got to go through that process to where Cal OSHA will pressure you in to make you saying, hey, I need to know what happened. Where's your root cause analysis? You have 3 days to give us your document. Well, time out. Let's work on what the root, because we don't want this to happen again. Let's keep our privileges intact. And I'll talk to the client about this. If they think we did a poor root cause analysis and get a $300 penalty for that, I'll take that without giving them a roadmap of something that's inaccurate that ends up being used against us in a criminal proceeding later or an S&W proceeding later or even just a issuance of a citation when you get to hearing.
Okay, I like your plan, and I like how you talk about dealing with the media. You will end up sometimes with newspaper reporters outside the gate. Sometimes the television reporters will show up. And really, when an incident, an accident, a fatality has just happened, you don't need to be out there blathering. It's not helpful, and kind of less is more is what I like to say. So, or more is less.
Less is more.
Less is more. Yeah. So we're not going to run out to the security gate and get a camera shoved in our face and start talking about it. That's just not going to be good.
Let me add one little tidbit, Karen. Here's one of my favorite statements that I have with clients. Is a lot of them are saying they start trying to defend their citation before it's been issued, right? And here's my point. I've been doing this for 20 years. I have yet to see someone talk themselves out of a citation that they're going to get anyway, but I have seen people talk them into citations that they didn't, that the enforcement officer wasn't thinking about. So answer the question, stay on time. It's not the time to defend your case before you've gotten the citations to know what you were there to defend.
So to close out this podcast, Kevin, what kind of fines, what are our penalties, what are our risk and exposures? Give me a range of what you've seen, what you advise clients about for the total monetary exposure that we can be looking at in a fatality.
Okay, in a fatality?
Yeah.
For the corporation, $1.5 million per count, which means per charge, which is basically per serious citation. Plus court costs, which is ranging depending on what court you're in, 3.2 times that. So let's say if you just got one citation and they charge you criminally on that, that's what, $4 million. In the S&W, it's 50% of whatever the total of the workers' comp claim is. Now, on a fatality, believe it or not, it's usually a little less than what it would be on a serious injury because the death benefit maybe is $400,000, your exposure is $200,000. By statute, it is not indemnifiable by the insurance company. That is out of your own pocket as a company when it comes to an S&W, serious and willful petition in workers' comp.
And a lot of times people will get served with a serious and willful and they'll send it into their workers' comp carrier and be entirely unprepared and disappointed to understand that that is an employer-paid penalty.
Yes.
And it tends to be shocking, and I agree with you, that the death benefit paid out in California be a couple hundred thousand dollars, but in serious injury, switching from a fatality to a serious injury, in a fall where you have a spinal injury, head injuries, you know, you can end up with $4-8 million life plans, and the employer, the serious and willful liability that they need to evaluate is 50% of those millions of dollars. And that's all of what you're talking about, thinking about when you get called out to a fatality.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, we hope we haven't been too macabre, too disappointing, talking about serious injuries and fatalities. But it is important for employers to understand and I would say have that preparedness plan that Kevin talked about and understand how best to deal with serious injuries and, heaven forbid, a fatality in the workplace. So we'll sign off for now. Again, say bye, Kevin.
Bye, Kevin.
Join us for our other podcast on workplace safety, which are rulemaking, introduction to workplace safety, Cal OSHA hearing practice, and many others. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.